Welcome to Context and Clarity. I am Chuck.
I am Karen.
I was a Democrat.
I was a Republican.
I am still a liberal.
And I'm still a conservative, but since our parties left us, we're not really sure what we are. But we do know this. As Abraham Lincoln reminds us, we are not enemies. We are friends.
We are friends. How are you doing this week, Karen?
I'm doing pretty good. We've been kind of playing catch up, trying to get our other podcast up and running. So it caused us to be a little late with this, and we apologize.
Yes, and if you like history, it's about spies.
Yeah, you should check it out. It's called Spy Stories.
Yes, and you do a great job writing those scripts, too.
Thank you. It's very fun to research. We have a good time with it. Well, the last episode, we began a series looking into the history of special investigations in this country. This week, we want to begin by playing fact or fake with a meme. Okay, Chuck. This one has an image of Hillary Clinton, President Obama, Robert Mueller, and President Bill Clinton. The text over Mrs. Clinton reads, "I sold 20% of America's uranium to Russia. Then the Russian government gave $145 million to the Clinton Foundation." What a coincidence. The text over President Obama reads, "I said okie dokie." The one over Mueller reads, "I delivered it." And the one over President Clinton reads, "I helped too." You know, like the old shake and bake commercial. "Mom made shake and bake and I helped." You remember those?
I don't. You're older than I am, Karen.
Whatever. Well, it was just like, yeah, I can just see Bill Clinton and I helped. But anyway, well, we're going to discuss the whole Uranium One sometime in a future episode. But right now, we're just going to focus on the Mueller aspect of this meme. What's your verdict, Chuck? Is it fact or is it fake?
I think he's going to say, "I did not shake and bake with that chicken."
So you think that it's fake?
I think it's pretty to do with it. Clearly fake, yeah.
Okay. Well, the answer is fake, but there's a little bit more context to it. There is no evidence whatsoever that Mueller was personally involved in the sale of mining licensing. He was FBI director at the time, and there were ongoing investigations into Russia under his supervision. And this is the only verifiable link to the claim, the fact that he was FBI director at the time. Now, here's where a lot of the wires get crossed. There was a situation where Robert Mueller delivered a tiny bit of uranium to Russia, but it had nothing to do with Hillary Clinton and the Uranium One mining license. Well, where it all got confusing was the day after Mueller was named special counsel, there was a WikiLeaks cable that dropped, and it made all the rounds of the hyperpartisan right news shows and websites. And it said that Mueller dropped off uranium to Moscow, and then all the very dramatic reporting left out the context and grossly misrepresented what details were available. According to the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, what Mueller did was not only legitimate, but it was necessary. Actually, there was Russian atomic materials smuggled in a case which likely originated during the very chaotic breakup of the Soviet Union. Georgian officials initially transferred the material to the FBI so that they could conduct a nuclear forensic examination of the material to attempt to determine where it had been stolen from. The amount of uranium that Mueller delivered to be investigated was actually equal to the weight of like 3 US pennies. So that's where that whole story came from. It had nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. There was nothing. He did, in fact, drop off that much uranium for an investigation, but it was a completely unrelated situation.
I think you would have to get someone very, very angry to give you the job of delivering uranium to someone. It's like,
why is that?
It's uranium. It just doesn't seem safe to hand. It's like, here, deliver these 12 rattlesnakes to someone.
Yeah, I agree.
I know we didn't get into this in the thing, but have you been watching the recent just spectacular meltdown that's been going on, speaking of Mueller?
A little bit. I can't deal with it all that much right now. It's just too, well, you know how I feel about John McCain and all of the tweets that he's been putting out about McCain. I just kind of can't handle any of it. So I've just sort of not been paying as close attention as I normally would.
Well, I heard something interesting. I heard a newsman say, what has the president so unhinged?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the better question is, why do we have an unhinged president and nobody really seems to care much about it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, well, let's get back to the history of special investigations and kind of see the roadmap that led us to where we are now.
Well, let's talk about the Truman tax scandals.
All righty, let's do that.
After Truman decided to drop two big old bombs on Japan and settle World War II, he had a tax scandal. Did you know that?
Did he?
Oh.
I did not. But, well, wait. Did you know that I was born?
I know. I was waiting for it. I was trying to set you up for this.
That Harry Truman died in.
I knew if I stalled that out long enough that you would work that in there.
Bring that
yeah.
up. Yeah,
and somewhere in here, even though it's not in the script, you're going to bring up Johnson. So, but in 1952, Karen, there was a man named Newbold Morris.
All right.
Who would come up with that name? He was a New York Republican.
Newbold.
And he was made special counsel to investigate accusations that the Department of Justice looked the other way while IRS collectors took illegal payments. Now, backed by President Harry Truman, Morris asked the Attorney General Howard McGrath, J. Howard McGrath, that sounds like a cartoon character, to disclose financial records and notes. McGrath said, oh, no, and fired Morris after just 63 days on the case. Truman quickly secured the Attorney General's resignation. There were 166 IRS agents that were found to be corrupt, and they were all fired, Karen.
Wow. There you go. Speaking of the IRS, I was teaching a Civil War spy class today, and it's kind of interesting. Do you know who the very first head of the Department of the IRS was?
J. Edgar Hoover?
No.
I just made that up.
It was Samuel Roth, I believe was his name. Yeah, Samuel Roth. He was a spy for the Union. And he was in charge of the railroad in Virginia. So everyone around him thought that he was a Confederate. And he actually sabotaged all the railroad comings and goings. And I mean, just created all kinds of problems. And everybody thought he was completely incompetent. But it turned out that he was just a really great spy. And for some reason, once the war was over, the president decided that he belonged at the IRS. So he was the first Internal Revenue Service director. There you go.
That was extremely interesting, Karen. Thank you for that.
I
was sitting here on the edge of my seat. Well, that build up. And then the fact that it just really went nowhere. That was so good. Thank you.
You know what? The kids in my class, I did a better job presenting it to them. But
I would hope so.
I guess if I tell the story in Spy Stories, I'll do a better job. But I just thought that was an interesting little tidbit.
Oh, it's fascinating.
Okay.
I mean, it's fascinating.
Which, you're such a jerk. Okay. Now we are at Watergate. There was so much context leading up to Watergate that it really deserves its own episode. So we're going to have to do that at some point. But the short version is what everybody knows. On June 17th, 1972, five men working for the committee to reelect the president, which, ironically enough, is the acronym CREEP.
That's a pretty cool acronym. Committee. Yeah.
Yeah. Committee to Reelect the President. Yeah. CREEP. Broke into the Democratic Party's headquarters in the Watergate, a hotel office building in Washington, D.C. They got caught going through files and trying to plant listening devices. 5 days later, Nixon denied any knowledge of it or that his administration played any role in it. The burglars went to trial in 1973 and either pled guilty or were convicted. But before sentencing, a letter was drafted contending that high Republican and White House officials knew about the break-in and had paid the defendants to keep quiet or lie during the trial. Investigation of these charges spread to a special Senate committee. John Dean, a White House lawyer, told the committee the letter spoke the truth and Nixon had known of the effort to cover up White House involvement. Then the dam broke and that revealed...
Karen, do you know why John Dean broke?
No.
He is the one who cracked. This is a true story. He was terrified of being abused in prison if he went there.
Really?
Yes, it was the thought of being in a men's prison and, you know, the stories of what happened to men who go to prison. And he was very professional and not a big man.
But, I mean, he would have gone to, like, a white-collar
I don't think that prison, was going though. Through his head, though. It's truly, that's the reason.
It sounds like he might have had some psychological stuff going on that he might have needed to deal with that. But anyway, when he did that, a dam broke and it revealed all sorts of damaging stuff, including the evidence that key documents linked Nixon to the cover-up of the break-in had been destroyed, and that the Nixon re-election committee had run a dirty tricks. So ironically, creep ran dirty tricks campaign against the Democrats, and that the administration had illegally wiretapped the phones of enemies. And the enemies were journalists who had been critical of Nixon. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Nixon seems like almost a Boy Scout compared to some of the stuff here. And what's really funny...
There's some similarities, though.
There are a lot of similarities. We were talking about that with my son, Taylor. The difference was Nixon was more effective. But... had all these things, had they come out, you know, Nixon would have probably just been censured had they not made such a huge, it's the cover up. It's always the cover up that gets you.
Right. Exactly. Well, in March 1974, former Attorney General John Mitchell and six top Nixon aides were indicted by a federal grand jury for trying to block the investigation. They were eventually convicted.
And Nixon, of course, being Nixon, tried to deny involvement. But then it was revealed that he routinely made secret tapes of his conversations in office. What kind of idiot does that? Nixon refused to turn over the tapes at first. And when he did agree, after firing a special prosecutor he appointed to look into this mess and seeing his new attorney general resign in protest, you... Google Saturday Night Massacre and you'll get that.
Right.
It turned out some of them were missing or had been destroyed. Now, in the summer of 1974, the House Judiciary Committee approved articles of impeachment against the president for obstructing justice. The tapes clearly showed Nixon had been part of the cover-up. On August 8, 1974, he submitted a one-sentence letter of resignation. And he went on television and said... I have always tried to do what is best for the nation. Now, the Watergate investigation lasted 1,464 days, cost a total of $47 million.
Right. Well, really 48.
Yeah, right about $48 million. It's kind of funny because I'm not old enough to really remember it that clearly. But politically, the Republicans all stood behind Nixon for a long... It wasn't until the end that the Republicans really turned on Nixon. So, you know, when you have comparisons of the... You know, and there's really no comparison because there's been nothing proven that our president has done anything of this nature.
Right.
But if there are... Much like Nixon, I think the support would erode quickly. Anyway, after Watergate, the method for choosing a special prosecutor was changed so that the president could not fire the person working on the investigation. The Ethics in Government Act of 1978 was enacted. We covered this, right? At first, it was only supposed to last for 5 years. It designated a panel appointed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. and it would be responsible for appointing a special prosecutor independent from reprisal by the White House. Although the Attorney General couldn't pick the investigator, they could still apply for the appointment of a special prosecutor under the statute.
Right, but in the Ethics in Government Act amendments of 1982, special prosecutor was officially changed to independent counsel. An independent counsel could only be terminated by the Attorney General, other than impeachment and conviction for, quote, good cause, physical or mental disability, or any other condition that substantially impairs the performance of such independent counsel's duties. The 1978 statute was amended, allowed to expire, and reauthorized over 2 decades until it finally expired in 1999. Independent counsels are now referred to as special counsels.
Yes, it changed everything there. Let's talk about the Carter Peanut Warehouse scandal.
Not a whole lot to talk about there.
No, but they tried to make it a big scandal at the time.
They did.
And in 1979, Paul Curran, a former U.S. attorney in New York, investigated allegations that President Carter had used a peanut warehouse as a front for illegal campaign contributions in 1976. Mr. Peanut was involved in that with his little shady monocle. Within 7 months, Curran cleared Carter. He wrote, every nickel and every peanut has been traced in and out of the warehouse. And no funds were unlawfully diverted in either direction. Lasted 208 days and a total of $1.2 million.
There you go. And now we are at Iran-Contra. So Iran-Contra was not the first investigation to plague President Reagan, but it was the main one. Independent counsels were named to investigate Reagan's labor secretary, attorney general, assistant attorney general, and legal counsel in separate cases, but none of the cases resulted in an indictment. The Iran-Contra affair was the product of 2 separate initiatives during President Reagan's administration. The first was a commitment to aid the Contras, who were conducting a guerrilla war against the Sandinista government of Nicaragua. The second was to appease Iranian moderates in order to secure the release of American hostages held by pro-Iranian groups in Lebanon and to influence Iranian foreign policy in kind of a pro-Western direction. The Democrat-controlled Congress enacted legislation known as the Boland Amendments that kept DOD, the CIA, and any other government agency from providing aid to Contras from December 1983 to September 1985. But the Reagan administration got around this prohibition by using the National Security Council, not explicitly covered by law, to supervise covert military aid to the Contras.
Yeah, I mean, and think about this. This is the Iran-Contra thing. I think this one of the biggest scandals in our history, because they actually created an amendment telling Reagan, you can't do this. And he just went around it.
Well, there was a loophole that he used.
He should have been impeached for it. But
anyway, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get rambling on that he had more administration officials. He had more administration officials indicted than any other president. And we could do just an entire episode on scandals in the Reagan administration.
Okay.
But that would get you all cranky. And
let's just move forward.
So we'll just move forward. We won't.
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, I don't want to. I mean, there's no time to go into the savings and loan crisis, Operation Win, the WedTech scandal, Debategate, the EPA scandals, the lobbying scandal, the Department of Housing and Urban Development scandal.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's just talk about Iran-Contra. So where was I? I believe I digressed. So under Robert McFarlane and John.
I wish you could see the look on my face right now.
Oh, I wish I could see the look on your face, too. This would be so good if we were doing it in video.
Okay.
You okay now? Did you take a deep breath?
Oh, just keep going. Yeah,
well, St. Ronnie wasn't who you think he was, girl. Anyway, under Robert McFarlane and John Poindexter, and anytime you got a Poindexter in your name, it's not going to be good. The NSC raised private and foreign funds for the Contras. This operation was directed by NSC staffer Marine Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who couldn't remember what he had for breakfast when he testified before Congress. McFarlane and North were also central figures in the plan to secretly ship arms to Iran despite a trade embargo. So the scandal broke in 1986 when reports in Lebanese newspapers forced the Reagan administration to disclose the arms deals. Poindexter resigned and North was fired. Congressional committees held joint hearings. And in 1986, Lawrence Walsh was named as a special prosecutor to investigate this. Higher administration officials, particularly Reagan, Vice President Bush, and William Casey, who was a former director of the CIA, were implicated in some testimony, but the extent of their involvement remained unclear. North said he believed Reagan was largely aware of the secret arrangement, and the independent prosecutor's report said that Reagan and Bush had some knowledge of the affair or its cover-up. Reagan and Bush both claimed to have been uninformed about all this, and no evidence was found to link them to any crime. Now, a number of criminal convictions resulted, including those of McFarlane, North, and Poindexter. But North and Poindexter's were vacated on appeal based on Senate immunity deals in return for testimony. Former State Department and CIA officials pleaded guilty in 1991 to withholding information about the Contra aid from Congress. And Caspar Weinberger, defense secretary under Reagan, was charged with the same offense. Now, in 1992, President Bush Sr. pardoned Weinberger and a bunch of other officials who'd been indicted or convicted for withholding information, and that really killed any chance they ever had to get to the bottom of that. So the investigation lasted 2,420 days, Karen, and cost the American taxpayer $81 million. And that's just one scandal under Reagan.
Okay.
You have,
now we have the BNL. Okay, we're done with that part, and we're moving on.
I thought we were going to do more Reagan scandals. No, being that he had more people indicted than any president in the history of our country. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I digress.
Well, now we have the BNL scandal, also known as Iraq Gate. Iraq policy began to change under the Reagan administration due to Iraq's opposition to the Iranian government. The U.S. started to normalize diplomatic relations with Iraq in the early 80s, and including financial provision to offset the Iran-Iraq war. In 1983, Iraq was added to the Commodity Credit Corporation, known as CCC, the CCCC,
CCCC.
The CCC program, which was run by the Department of Agriculture, which issued credit to nations for the purchase of U.S. agricultural products. After several thousands of Kurds were gassed by Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein and sanctions were on the table, Congress was forced to take a second look at our more friendly policy with Iraq. But despite congressional reevaluation, the Reagan and later the Bush administration continued to seek good relations with Iraq with the hopes of holding greater influence in the region. In 1989.
Not to interrupt you, Karen, or go off script here.
Okay, don't.
I just want to throw in something. We kind of told the Kurds, hey, if you want to overthrow the government, we'll kind of help you. And they did that. And we didn't really help them when they got gassed. It was not a pretty thing.
No, it was not good. Right. National Security Decisions Directive 26, signed by Bush, directly supported increased financial links with Iraq. This desire for improved relations lasted until Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1990, and this prompted the Persian Gulf War. The friendly Iraq policy again came under intense media scrutiny in 1989 following a search of the Banca
Nacional.
I cannot say that, so.
Del
Nacional del Lavoro. Yeah. I can't say
it like Natasha. You can do it. Banca Nazionale del Lavoro.
BNL, an Italian bank with a branch in Atlanta, Georgia. I can say Atlanta, Georgia.
You can. Go ahead, Oki. Let's say it.
The bank's branch manager was accused of having loaned Iraq about $4 billion, which was used for the illegal purchase of weapons. When it was discovered that some of those funds were connected with the CCC program, allegations emerged that the Iraqis were buying U.S. agricultural products for less than the loan amounts they received and then using these extra funds for arms purchases. But there was never any proof that the Bush administration had knowledge of BNL's illegal activities. It was reported that the administration had continued to provide funds to Iraq despite this corruption. The scandal also brought to light Iraq's apparent credit problems, and the administration's eagerness to engage with such a borrower was called into question. The media dubbed the scandal Iraqgate as an allusion to Watergate. The sensationalism of that name kind of led an entire onslaught of media attention on Iraqgate, and numerous internal investigations were launched by Congress and the executive branch. The House Banking Committee, for example, examined whether there were possible problems with banking practices, and the Department of Agriculture launched a probe into its CCC program. A special Senate committee on Iraqgate was also created. 4 years were spent investigating different aspects of Iraqgate. Attorney General Janet Reno released a 119-page report in 1995 summarizing the findings of nearly 20 prosecutors and investigators. There was no evidence found of a conspiracy or cover-up. Some argue that poor policy was made, but there was absolutely no evidence of illegal action. The official special investigation lasted 54 days and cost $651,000. So this was one of the, for as long as it lasted, it was actually like one of the cheaper investigations.
Okay, so let's look at Whitewater, Karen.
All right.
Back in 1978, you were probably just a little sprout then.
I wasn't even born yet.
Well, then you would not know about this. When Bill Clinton was Attorney General of Arkansas, he and Hillary partnered with James and Susan McDougal to purchase 220 acres of land in the Ozark Mountains of Arkansas that eventually became the Whitewater Development Corporation. The venture failed, costing the Clintons a reported $40,000 in losses. Bill was not a rich man back then. Then he was elected governor, and a short time later, in November of 78, McDougal entered the banking industry, forming Madison Savings and Loan. Now, in 1986, federal regulators investigated another real estate deal involving McDougal. McDougal, I wouldn't invest with anybody named McDougal. It's like Dougie McDougal. He's a kid that like always picked his nose and ate it down the street or something.
Well, right. And Karen McDougal is one of the people that the president is.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right. McDougal. Yeah. It's a scandalous name.
I wonder if she's related to him.
I would think so.
McDougals.
That's a shady family. This investigation ended up in McDougal's resignation and the collapse of the bank, along with a lot of other savings and loans, I guess. This opened up questions surrounding the Clintons' involvement in the Whitewater deal. These questions snowballed until an official investigation was launched. The investigation, led by Robert Fisk, found that the Clintons had pressured a loan that benefited both Clinton and Madison Guaranty, the bank McDougal had. Fisk proceeded to issue a grand jury subpoena to President Clinton and his wife for documents related to Madison Guaranty. Now, while the Clintons initially reported the records as missing, but they were really on Hillary's email server, the documents eventually were found and the Clintons were cleared of any wrongdoing.
Oh, hey, look at that.
But the investigation continued with Kenneth Starr at the helm and businessman David Hale The man pressured to write the loan is a Starr witness. Starr alleged that Clinton, during his term as governor of Arkansas, pressured Hale to make an illegal $300,000 federally backed loan to Susan McDougal. The allegations lost much of its credibility after Hale was convicted of numerous felonies. So, but that's the thing about these investigations. When people are committing crimes, you're not going to find any squeaky clean people in the middle of
them. Right. That doesn't mean that
everybody's going to be criminals. Well, the Starr investigation went on to include the Lewinsky sex scandal. Somehow we went from...
I know. I have to say, you know, I was so young when all that was going on. I didn't fully understand it. And researching it, it was so far beyond the purview of the investigation. It really was. But
yes. And think about this, Karen. All three inquiries into the Whitewater land deal yielded nothing. Charged the Clintons with.
Okay, it yielded insufficient evidence. I mean, there was a bunch of shady stuff that came out, but
there were a lot of shady things. Evidence. But you know what? If people investigated you, they'd find all kinds of shady things too, but nothing to really indict you on. So, I mean, is really that the standard we want to take? Well, I'm just saying, I don't think you ought to be the one throwing stones there. Plus, you throw like a girl, so don't do
that. That is not an insult. That is not an insult. You obviously are not as progressive as you think.
No, I've seen girls throw really well. That's why I'm saying don't pick up a rock and throw it at the Clintons' big glass house. Now, several of the associates in this investigation were convicted as a result of the investigations. And the whole Clinton affair here, like I call it, the Clinton affair, lasted 3,762 days or something. And which is ironic that, you know, Republicans now are screaming for Mueller to wrap this up.
Right.
That I mean, they investigated. At one point, they had Starr had an evidence from Clinton's fourth grade report card where he turned a C into a B with a pencil. Well, he tried to enter that into evidence.
He probably also had that film, you know, where Bill Clinton was at that funeral and they caught him like laughing and then he saw the camera and he like started weeping.
Got real stern.
Yeah, that was probably there considered as evidence too.
And that changed changed the nature of the special prosecutor.
Well, now we have Plamegate, and there's still a lot written about the whole Plame affair that makes it very confusing to explain, but here's our best shot. So Valerie Plame, I always thought it was Valerie Plume, but what do I know, was a covert CIA operative working on weapons proliferation or working against it. Her husband, Joe Wilson, was sent to Niger by the CIA to investigate allegations that Hussein was trying to obtain uranium ore from Niger. President George W. Bush referenced the attempts to get the uranium during the State of the Union address. The CIA had already determined the story was a hoax at the time of the speech. So that's a pretty big deal. Now, Wilson then wrote a New York Times op-ed debunking the administration's claims regarding the uranium ore, saying that the intelligence that the claims were based on was that they were not fact-based. After that, Ms. Plame's identity as a covert op was leaked to the media, including columnist Robert Novak, among others. It was a suspected play from Cheney's office as retribution for the Times op-ed. The illegal release of this classified information destroyed Plame's cover, her work and perhaps career, and the cover company she was based under. So, investigations ensued.
And think about this, and I really do believe if you read into this and you read everything you possibly can with it and try to be without bias.
Right.
Cheney absolutely was behind this.
Right.
And when you think about that, when you blow the cover of an agent, you don't just blow their cover, you blow the cover of anyone she's ever been associated with.
Right.
And there are people you know, she was working over in the Middle East. So once it came out that she was a CIA operative, anybody that had ever done business with her, who knows how many people were killed because
it was
very
damaging. Right. Well, after incredible displays of verbal gymnastics, Cheney aide Scooter Libby was convicted of perjury and obstruction of justice. Many powerful people submitted amicus briefs calling for leniency, so he was fined and given a jail sentence. President Bush commuted the jail sentence but did not pardon him. President Trump recently did. That investigation lasted 1,443 days at a cost of over $3
million. $3
million. $3 million.
There were no special prosecutorial investigations of the Obama White House. Now, there were congressional investigations. Trey Gowdy could... He was investigating everything. I think they investigated Benghazi.
Okay, you're right.
How many
there were some legitimate investigations. It wasn't just Benghazi. That's the one that everyone talks about, but there were other ones.
But they investigated Benghazi 11 times.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and you had the IRS bias thing, you know, that, which is vastly, vastly, vastly overrated. Or over.
That's your opinion. We're not getting.
No. That it truly was. If you get down to the facts,
okay.
If you're stupid
but
enough to be a nonprofit,
those facts. So don't just say it as though you have a tendency to do that. You just throw things out as because your opinion that makes it factual. If we're not going to back it up, then
okay. In my opinion, let me issue a little disclaimer here. My opinion. If you're gonna be like. Patriots for blah, 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 then they're going to look at you. If you put a name that jumps out at them, they're going to look at you as are you a political organization that should legitimately be tax exempt? Anyway, then you had the arms program, Fast and Furious.
Solyndra Solar Company loans.
Yeah, you had that. None of these rose to any significant level of scandal. Although Fast and Furious, that was, you can kind of see the reasoning behind it, but it was a stupid thing to do.
Well, it was a lot, to me, that was very, very similar to President Bush Sr., what he did with the whole Iraq Gate thing, where it was like questionable policy, but not really
illegal. Right.
I think it was very similar to that.
And you had the Affordable Health Care Act launch, which some people would say was scandalous. But, you know, these investigations, you know what they didn't include?
Right, his personal holdings.
You know why, Karen?
Because he made them readily available to Congress, unlike other people.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's jump to where are we now, Karen?
The current situation. Well, the initial investigation under the purview of Special Counsel Robert Mueller was to investigate collusion with Russia's interest in the 2016 election. But as we established earlier last year in our scandal episode, anything that Mueller uncovers as he works his investigation, he is required to hand over to relevant officials. So that is a legitimate thing to do under his...
Right. That's under his scope. He's supposed to hand it to the Attorney General. The Attorney General will then decide if it should be made public or if he should just give a condensed version to Congress. That's what they're arguing about now.
So far, these are the investigations at hand. And I just took out the congressional investigations because, I mean, there's going to be a lot. And some are going to be legitimate and some are going to be politically, you know, politicized. So I'm just going with the ones that went to an official place. So the New York tax authorities and New York Attorney General are investigating potential tax evasion and fraud. U.S. prosecutors in New York are investigating campaign finance violations. This is where Cohen comes in. U.S. prosecutors in New York and the Attorney General of New Jersey and the districts of Columbia are investigating the inaugural committee fundraising donors and foreign interests. And one thing that's very interesting to me as I was doing some of my research is that some of the biggest donors to the inaugural committee are some of the same people that are contracted or were on the list of likely contractors to help build the wall.
And detention centers.
Right.
Build detention centers. Yes. Those were big, big donors to the inauguration.
I mean, I saw it. I came across it and did the research myself. So I'm not just going off of somebody else's reporting. I saw the source documents.
You don't have to give a disclaimer like I do every time you say something.
All right. The New York Attorney General and the New York Department of Taxation and Finance are investigating the Donald J. Trump Foundation. So far, the investigation has yielded 34 indictments and has cost over $26 million. So recently, Trump said that it was nearing $40 million. That's not true based on the latest financial disclosures. However, the really interesting thing about this is that the cost, the $26 million, has already been covered by the civil forfeitures and fines that those that were indicted are faced with. They've actually
this has been a moneymaker for the government.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The Russia investigations, the whole thing is headed towards a close. So it'll be really interesting to see what it says. But we know that this is really far from over because of all the other investigations that are looming. And those don't even count the congressional probes, which are going to be, at the
which are going to be probing.
They are going to be incredibly probing. Yes. As you can see from history, this investigation is no more of a witch hunt than many of the other investigations of the past were. And as we say so often, there really is nothing new under the sun.
Right. Yeah, you've had in this one 34 indictments, which is 104 indictments less than you had under the Reagan administration. So for now, that is all we have to say about that.
I mean, I hope you enjoyed yourself with this episode because I will get back at you.
It was truly the most corrupt administration we've ever had.
Chuck Walters.
I mean, it was like Al Capone was running the government.
All right. That's all we have to say about that. We appreciate all of you, except Chuck. I appreciate all of you who take the time to listen. You can find us on all the platforms that podcasts are on, and you can also join our Facebook group if you would like. Pretty awesome people there, and we are there under Context and Clarity Podcast Facebook group. We have some really awesome moderators that we would like to thank you. And you can also find us on Twitter at Clarity Context, and you can find us on Instagram as Clarity and Context. Context and Clarity, actually. But we really appreciate all of you, and we look forward to talking to you later. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.